Good morning. It's so good to see you, and we are very fortunate that we have a number of visitors with us today. And so we're glad that you've come this way, come far, in many cases, I assume, that you've come to be with us, and we're glad that you have joined us in worship today. For those that are always here, you know I love you. And for those that are unable to be here, that watch us on our live streaming, we're glad that you're with us in mind, if not in body. For the congregation, let me introduce the Carter family that is sitting over here. They have moved into the area, and so please be sure that we greet them today, because that's a good thing. And this morning, I want to talk to you for a moment about a defining hope. And in this, it's brought to me from Hebrews, in our study on Hebrews on Wednesdays, and then back in chapter 6, as we were looking at this, there is this sense of things, if you will, that a common sense of things is the way I would say it. And so I want to read again Hebrews 6, 9 through 20. It says, Beloved, that we are convinced of better things concerning you and things that accompany salvation, though we are speaking in this way. For God is not unjust, so as to forget your work and the love which you have shown toward his name in having ministered and is still ministering to the saints. And we desire that each one of you shows the same diligence so as to realize the full assurance of hope until the end, so that you will not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. For when God made the promise to Abraham, since he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself, saying, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply you. And so having patiently waited, he obtained the promise, and for men swear by one greater than themselves, and with them an oath given as confirmation is an end of every dispute. But in the same way, God, desiring even more to show to the heirs of the promise the unchangeableness of his purpose, interposed with an oath, so that by two unchangeable things, which it is impossible for God to lie, that we who have taken refuge would have strong encouragement to take hold of the hope that is set before us, and that this hope we have as an anchor of the soul, a hope both sure and steadfast, and one which enters within the veil, where Jesus has entered as a forerunner for us, having become a high priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. Okay, and so as we're looking at this, it kind of goes back to, because we're in Hebrews 10, we've been talking about the idea that the covenant was made both for God and for man, and the part for God, only God could deal with what was necessary for him to turn his wrath away from sin. And that Jesus makes the sacrifice, of which we've just remembered, and in the process of that Jesus now is at the right hand of God in the Holy of Holies, where he dwells permanently. And so this was to give us hope. And for man, it was the sense that man needs his conscience cleared, that he can be holy or at least righteous or something that takes us from the man that we were and into the man God would have us be, and that we might have confidence in that. And I'm telling you that that is the hope that God has given us, is that I trust what he has done and said, and that I believe to the point that I believe that God will save me in the end, and that I will go to heaven in the end, and that so will anyone else who will believe as they should believe. And yet, while I'm making that point and setting the premise of this, while God has set everything up that we may be what we should be, our confidence is in our hands. And if you don't have confidence, then there's a problem. that my hope isn't hope is if it isn't assured. And it is of that nature that I want to talk about today. And so the first thing that I want to say is, how would you define Christianity? And as I say that, I'm talking to a room full of Christians. And what do you talk about if you or someone asks you, so what is Christianity and how would you describe it? And I'm going to use a few verses that are maybe simplistic, but bear with me. So in Matthew 18, truly I say to you, unless you are converted and become like little children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever then humbles himself as this child, he is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him to have a heavy millstone hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea. So, how good are you at going back to being a child? Now, I know that we live in a world where things are complex and we need to be able to deal with complexity. There doesn't seem like anymore there's any question that is a simple question. Everything seems to be a complex question. Takes complex answers. All those types of things. And yet Jesus says, no, whoever humbles himself as this child, he is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever receives that one, okay, in my name receives me. Can I be innocent again? And the truth is, I can't. What I would give to be innocent again. But I can't. But I can be non-judgmental. I can be dedicated toward the things of God. I can be a whole lot of things that are simple in their nature. And so this may be one of our definitions of what Christianity is. In 1 John 2:28, now little children, abide in him, so that when he appears, he may have confidence and not shrink away from him in shame at his coming. Now, why would this statement even be in the Bible is a question. If Christians are what they are to be, if we are to assume that those that would name Jesus as their Savior, that would depend on Him for the forgiveness of sin, that understands all the good things that we have, why would you shrink away because I haven't been who I should be knowing what I know? That's how. And I don't want to be that person, you see. And that means I have to clean up my act, that I really have to deal with me, not for your sake, that you may see someone that gives a good example, but for my sake, that I may be someone that I can look at in the mirror and say to God, Lord, save me. Because if I'm guilty, I can't say that. If I'm still guilty, I can't say that. Now, please understand, when I say those kinds of things, I don't mean that every little sin would take us that way, that the things I do by accident, whatever. I'm talking about the thing that I will not give up, the thing that I will not put away. Any of you have a problem with temper? Well, if so, there comes a day when you must deal with that little hummer and that I've got to do something about this. Or whatever the problem may be that would trouble you, then there is a time when we have to deal with that thing. And so that's there. 1 John 3:18, little children, let us not love with word and tongue, but in deed and truth. Therefore, that my sense of accepting the love of God, by accepting the sacrifice of Jesus, by accepting all the things that God says, and my acceptance of those things then is to be reflected, and that is the light. And while we get caught up in the details of the commands and all those kinds of things, I'm telling you, this is not this is not easy to command. So, which of you shall I come to and say, love me because God told you to? It's not like that. We are supposed to love what God has created. Love those that love God. We are supposed to love them for who they are, in spite of the fact that I can be disgusting on certain days. Y'all don't believe that, do you? Don't be nodding yet, Renee. Don't be doing that. Okay. So, but you get my point. You get my point. That's some of the things, all right? Or maybe we go to 1 John 4, that God is love, and the one who abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. By this, love is perfected with us, so that we may have confidence in the day of judgment, because as he is, so also are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves punishment, and the one who fears is not perfected in love. And so we have a measure here, that if you still fear, if you still are struggling with the fact that I don't know if God's going to save me or not, if I'm doubting along those lines, if I'm struggling, it is because you're not dwelling in love. Because if you love as God loves, and that you give that love to all men, regardless. And please, there's some people who are disgusting out there that truly are. And I don't want to love them necessarily because of the things they do, but every man has a soul that needs to live, and given the knowledge of Jesus, they can make that choice and turn from what they've been into something that is unrecognizable. Right? Because it happened to me. All right, that's how we think about those things. And so when I take that, we've got the place here in this particular passage that gives us then the sense of where our confidence comes from. It is not by the letter of the law specifically, even though I must keep the letter of the law. It is by an attitude of care that I measure myself and find myself to be within what God would have me be. And so those things, as we understand them, and however we define Christianity, that from our scripture reading, we have this place where that our hope is to become the anchor of my soul, and that my hope is stationed in the Holy of Holies. So, y'all are aware of the song Whispering Hope. And so this is a song that was written. And when we take the definition of Christianity as being the one of practice of love and of deeds and of abiding dedication, as a metonymy for each of these words represents far more than a single action, if I say that, the song Whispering Hope has done the same thing. It makes some points here. And so, this was written, if you'll look it up, by Alice Hawkins. But Alice Hawkins is a pseudonym, and it's actually, his name is Septimus Winner. And he is, if you turn to this, number 497, you'll see at the bottom of the page that he wrote the music and Alice is supposedly the words, but he is both. And he was a very accomplished songwriter and musician. He wrote, Where, Oh, Where Has My Little Dog Gone? Listen to the Mockingbird, all popular in the 1800s. And then, he wrote a song called Give Us Back Our Commander, speaking of General George McClellan, that Abraham Lincoln fired because he went too far on his wrath against the South. And so Lincoln fired him. And because he wrote this song, it sold 80,000 copies in 2 days. That many people liked McClellan. He was tried for treason. Well, he got out from underneath that, and then he started writing almost completely religious songs. So this one, as we look at it, soft as the voice of an angel, breathing a lesson unheard, hope with a gentle persuasion whispers her comforting word. Wait till the darkness is over, wait till the tempest is done, hope for the sunshine tomorrow after the shower's gone. Now, as I look at that, you see, it's talking about me and my life, you see, that I know, okay, that soft whisper of God about who we should be, and that the breathing of a lesson that I haven't learned. I know about those things, okay? That hope, you see, then comes and comforts, because I would have no hope. But I have hope. And that begins as a hope that I'm not sure of. A doubting hope, if you will. And yet the darkness that comes, everything that comes has a new day. And so consequently, I look forward to the new day, hoping for that sunshine tomorrow, even if it's raining today. Then, if in the dusk of the twilight dim be the region afar, will not the deepening darkness brighten the glimmering star, that the darker it is, the brighter a light will be, even a dim one. And then when the night is upon us, don't sink away, but when dark midnight is over, watch for the breaking of day, because we live in the day. Hope is an anchor so steadfast, rends the dark veil for the soul, and whither the master has entered, robbing the grave of his soul, of its goal. Come then, O come glad fruition, come to my sad, weary heart. Come, O thou blessed hope of glory, never, O never depart. You see, my hope becomes stronger to the point that my hope could be almost everything. Do you understand? I'm just talking about intensity here. It is not alone. Hope is not alone. It is based in my deeds. It is based in the love that I give. It is based in so many different things. We understand that. But my hope becomes my lifeline. And it is of that we're talking about. Whispering hope, oh, how welcome thy voice, making my heart in its sorrow rejoice. That is what we are really talking about. Now, as we go back then, I want to consider from Hebrews 6 again that in the same way, God desiring even more to show the heirs of the promise, the unchangeableness of his purpose, interposed with an oath, so that two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for him to lie, that we who have taken refuge would have strong encouragement to take hold of the hope that is set before us. Okay, so I'm kind of going to go to a place here that if I think about Abraham, who has been given instructions and has a covenant of his own, that I'm going to give you a land, I'm going to make you a great nation, and through your seed all the families of the earth are going to be blessed. Here we have a covenant that's going to be given to him, and that he believes in that covenant, and that even though he doesn't have the son that God has promised him, he still believes that it's coming. He's hoping for the day of that son. We understand what's going on in his life, and that he is emblematic of what we're talking about. Then one day the son comes, and he now has the son at an age that he says, you know, he didn't think he could have a son at 80, and here I'm having a son at 100. And so what a day this is. God can do anything. And that's exactly the way he comes out of that. Then offer that son and give him, kill him. The thought, God told me to do something that is impossible before, that something impossible was going to happen before, and it happened. But he told me that it was going to be through this son that my descendants would be like the sand of the sea. And so what he does then is he believes, gets up the next day, goes the 3 days journey, builds the altar, and is ready to sacrifice his son, because if I kill him, God will raise him from the dead. And he recognizes that this isn't just a nothing thing. This is something that God is building. He's building something, and I don't know what part I'm playing in this, but I know He's building something, and I'm going to be part of this. I will do what I'm told. Okay, He does that. Now then, I said, went through all that because you know it. I want to now say, but do you believe when you are looking back that God has done everything He said He was going to do and fulfilled everything He said He was going to build? It is essential to this passage that we understand that. God did not lie. He has never led anyone astray along those lines. He did exactly what He said He was going to do. Jesus is identified by hundreds of promises or prophecies in identifying that He is the one and the right one, and that He is doing the job that God intended for Him to do, and that He is now in the place that He's supposed to be. We know that. And so God gave us assurance of the things to come by His oath and by His honesty, that He is so acute He can't lie, and that we have a promise that can be counted on and know that His end will be fulfilled. What God intended is being fulfilled. And that we take our hope by being anchored in the promises of God. Okay, so with that going on, we go back and take a look once again in Romans, for this reason it is by faith, in order that it may be in accordance with grace, so that the promise will be guaranteed to all the descendants, not only to those who are of the law, but also those who are of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. And as it is written, a father of many nations I have made you, and in the presence of him whom he believed, even God, who gives life to the dead and calls into being that which does not exist. In hope against hope, he believed so that he might become a father of many nations according to that which has been spoken, so shall your descendants be. Now, the faith of Abraham is not simply that he believed he was going to have a child. The faith of Abraham is not that he believes God is going to make all things happen, even though he's not going to see them. His faith is, you see, is that he has hope that what God has told me is true. He believes what God said, and now he acts accordingly because he believes. And his hope then is that all these things will happen. And when it says all the families of the earth shall be blessed, it did not get twisted as with the Israelites, who think that they're going to be God's chosen people forever and still do. No. This goes on. It actually tells us here that his descendants would be all those who believe by faith, all those who will believe in God and adhere to the promises given and those things done. And so Abraham, by his faith and the grace of God, had all these things happen. Their hope was not based against firm and factual aspects of God's creation, but on promises that he would never see. That his belief gave rise to nations of people who would believe in the same way. And so that your descendants will be, and we are, the sons of Abraham, based on our belief in what God says, and we fix our hope on the promises that truly cannot be proven at this time. It is by faith we believe. Our hope is for the reward of our faith. For in hope we have been saved, but hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what he already sees? But if we hope for what we do not see with perseverance, we eagerly wait for it. Now, I want us to see that our hope then is essential to our faith. That we believe more in what God has said than we do in what we see. Do we not? So as I'm thinking about this, then, we go back to the place that I really wanted to talk about. that this hope that we have as an anchor of the soul, a hope both sure and steadfast, and one which enters within the veil. Now, the veil is talking about the tabernacle or the temple, of which we have the holy place and then the holy of holies where the ark was, okay? And there was a veil between there, the veil that was rent when Jesus died. That veil that now symbolically we're being talked about, that our hope isn't in the things outside the holy of holies, but inside the holy of holies. The place where the mercy seat is. The place where God grants forgiveness. The place where Jesus sits with his sacrifice for us that declares us and our hope as being valid. So the hope that goes within the veil, okay, you see, it states that our hope acts as an anchor. And so if you take a look at some anchors, anchors are used for more than one thing. Many times it's just to hold a ship in place because we don't want it to move. We're going to shut down the engines and we're going to just let it sit. But then there's a time when the sea is rough and they drop the anchor to hold them steadier, as going to be my way of saying that. You can ask Wade if you want to about more of this. It's important that the anchor then be strong and that it will hold. I don't need an anchor that won't hold. I have to tell you, I went fishing with some guys and we were in a 16-foot little skiff boat. Okay, it had a front seat and a back seat, outboard motor. They threw out an anchor that was that wide and that tall for this little 16-foot boat. I said, man, y'all must have big waves around here. And I thought that was a little overkill. On the other hand, that boat never moved if they threw out that anchor. As a matter of fact, pulling it in was its own work. Our hope is for the anchor of our soul and its destination and our confidence. Our hope is anchored inside the veil where Jesus is and gives us that hope. And our anchor doesn't keep us from feeling the effects of the storm, but it keeps us from crashing or drifting. That's what an anchor does. And so when I ask you, is your hope firm? We're going to gain a great deal of what's enumerated in the song Whispering Hope. That our hope will keep us steady during the times of darkness and storm. It will, when the darkness is truly dark, we see light, even a small light, clearer. And it triggers us that the day will come. The darkness may be the times of doubt and indecision, but the day is coming when what is right will be clearly seen. That though Jesus may seem to be a slim line to heaven to base your life's hope on, his success in getting to heaven and securing our line was necessary, and he is as dependable as it comes in keeping it. We are held by his example and his life and his death. And so, when I ask you about your hope, it is our hope that holds my attitude, that holds our spirit during the times of trouble. Therefore, make your lines fast and anchor well, for your destination can be reached. If you sail well, and anchor well. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Is that not our motto? God is faithful. He defines faithfulness. And so this morning, if you've been on a sea that is stormy, I want you to believe this. I want you to believe that we're not going to be lost at sea. because we have an anchor that will hold. If you're not a Christian, we would ask that you would become one. Not for our sake, but for yours. And for our sake, I should say. But that you may have that place in your life where you are steady, where you know that things are what they should be, that the rules don't change, and that the promises never fail. Those things are ready to, for you to be baptized into Christ and wash your sins away. And for us that have been on the seas for a long time, if you have need of the prayers of this congregation, won't you come as we stand and sing?